He was always regarded as one of the great prodigies of music history, which he certainly was. But for a variety of reasons, there was a reaction against his music. He was associated with the Victorians in the 19th century, and when there was a turn against Victorianism at the end of the century, Mendelssohn was a target. The other main point is that he was the grandson of Moses Mendelssohn, a Jewish philosopher of the 18th century. And even though Felix was a Protestant, he converted, he was baptized when he was 7 years old. In the eyes of the European world, he was a Jew to many. So his music was attacked by Richard Wagner. And in the 20th century, the Nazis banned his music, tore down his statue. So he was always viewed as a composer who had, as great as he was, somehow had missed true greatness. And that needed a corrective. The corrective has come in the latter part of the 20th century. Now his music is being performed everywhere. He's much more highly regarded. My biography was an attempt to sort of bring him out of the shadows, explain a bit of the reception of history, and give a more critical and fuller account of his life and music.
So would you say that until recently he was pretty much known for a handful of works?
Yeah, there always were the standard concert pieces. I remember when I was growing up, I always loved his music. But, you know, if you go back several decades, the 1960s and 70s, the violin concerto was always done, the Italian symphony, the Scottish symphony. If there was an oratorial society, they were for sure singing Elijah, especially in England. The octet was done because he was only 16 when he wrote it, and, you know, it's a kind of Mozartian masterpiece that he wrote. The Midsummer Night's Dream and a few other pieces. But a lot of his other music had been sort of forgotten or wasn't performed that often. And there was an uneasy sense that, yeah, he wrote this incredible music, but the general wisdom was, well, he didn't rise to the level of a Beethoven or a Brahms or a Bach. So there always was this sort of second guessing about how he fit in. A lot of that really came from the Wagnerian critique. Wagner had basically said that for all Mendelssohn's talents and abilities, because he was Jewish, he could not be a great composer. And when you strip away the racist part of that, you're left with the idea that Mendelssohn somehow was not a great composer. He's a superficial composer who wrote nice, sweet music. And much of the 20th century had this sort of idea about him. And I think the truth is he's a serious and profound composer whose music operates on many different levels and approaches the whole question of the aesthetic in many different ways. And once we recognize that, we can truly appreciate the breadth of his intellect and of his musical genius.
Is there a number of he composed over how many works in his lifetime?
Oh, he composed several hundred pieces, but he, like Beethoven, this is something he shared with Beethoven, he was a zealous reviser. All of his major works were revised, often several times. This is the reason why the Hebrides Overture is also known as the Fingal's Cave Overture. He kept changing the title and kept fussing with it. He once said to Robert Schumann, one of his friends, that he basically only released about one-fifth of what he had composed. So his musical estate, quite a bit of which was locked up in East Germany, you know, before the wall came down, has, you know, probably a good 100 or so early student compositions that he never published. And there are other projects that he never finished.
Can we talk a little bit about his life? Born
Sure.
in 1809, he died in 1847. He had a really short life,
Yes.
but he started early.
Yes. I mean, he lived to the ripe old age of 38, so 3 years longer than Mozart. So like Mozart, Mendelssohn was this prodigy whose life is sort of meteor-like, and packed into his life is just an amazing amount of music, not just compositions, but if we think about the versatility of this musician, he was, of course, one of the great pianists of his age. He was arguably the leading organist of the entire century. I mean, most organists would probably concur with that. Some might make a case for César Franck, one or two others, but it was Mendelssohn who brought back the great organ works of Bach, for instance. He was also, it's not that well known, a violinist and a violist. He could pick up a part in his own octet and play that. And of course, he was one of the seminal conductors of the 19th century. He's one of the first conductors to conduct using a baton and to develop modern orchestral rehearsal techniques. So if you take all of those things, you know, that would be enough for one musician. But then if you add to it all his music that he composed. His editing, he revived the same Matthew Passion of Bach when he was 20. He revived and edited oratorios of Handel. It's a staggering accomplishment, and you get the sense of a person who was rather frenetic. You know, he was just a workaholic, constantly working at something. And one could think also of what he did in Leipzig, the Gewandhaus Orchestra, which is today one of the premier orchestras. It became so under Mendelssohn's baton in the 1830s and 40s.
I read that he also studied art and literature, and that he painted mm-hmm. watercolors.
Yes, as an avocation, he was a draftsman and a painter. He left several dozen very beautiful watercolors of Swiss landscapes. Wagner was impressed, saw some of those and was impressed by them. He was also an amateur poet. He was a translator. You know, one amazing piece that he wrote is a setting of a psalm, his Non Nobis Domine. I think it's Psalm 115. He composed it to the Latin text, but when it was published, the German publisher insisted that there should be a German text, and so Mendelssohn had to come up with a German translation of the Latin psalm that would fit his music that he had already composed, and he pulled that off with typical aplomb. I mean, he was a towering intellect, attended the University of Berlin. One of his teachers there was the philosopher Hegel. It's now Humboldt Universität, but it was the University of Berlin, which was founded in 1812, so it was a new university. And you have to imagine a young Mendelssohn around the time that he's composing the Midsummer Night's Dream Overture and the Calm Sea and Prosperous Voyage Overture. He's about 17, 18, going to hear lectures of Hegel, you know, on phenomenology or whatever, and taking notes and digesting metaphysics in addition to composing all this music. It's rather something to think about.
You mentioned the performance of Bach's St. Matthew's Passion. Yes. He studied with Seltzer in Berlin, and I guess David Hayes said he was pretty much responsible for the Bach revival. Is that?
Well, there are some scholars who would quibble about that because, you know, you never can reduce history to just one event. But Mendelssohn's accomplishment is staggering. He began studying the St. Matthew Passion in the early 1820s. So, you know, he would have been, I mean, this is a teenager, basically, doing this. He gathered some friends, formed a small chorus, rehearsed parts of it. His sister, Fanny, who was 3.5 years older, sang in the chorus, also was deeply immersed in the study of Bach. And then Mendelssohn had to sort of argue with Seltzer, his teacher, to get permission to perform this. The typical idea about Bach in those days is that Bach was, you know, a very complex, complicated Baroque composer. Nobody could really understand his music. It was just too convoluted, and you know, the public would never sit for 2 hours to listen to the St. Matthew Passion. But Mendelssohn did it, and he was only 20 years old. It occurred in March 1829 in Berlin at the Berlin Singakademie, which still stands. It's not far from the Brandenburg Gate off the Unter den Linden. And that was the event which largely triggered the modern Bach revival. The St. Matthew Passion was reclaimed as this towering work of Protestant music, and it's a piece that Mendelssohn identified with himself and his music in profound ways. It helps to explain why Mendelssohn's music is filled with chorale settings, for instance, and it also helps to explain why Mendelssohn was so interested in counterpoint.
Was he influenced by Bach to a very large degree? What did he incorporate of Bach, and how was he different?
Yes, he was totally into Bach, but to give the broader context, we have to explain that the whole Mendelssohn family was totally into Bach. His sister Fanny was playing the well-tempered clavier, at least the preludes from memory, when she was 14 years old. His mother, Leah, had grown up playing the well-tempered clavier. He had an aunt, Sarah Levy, who was one of the patronesses of Carl Philipp Emanuel Bach, one of Bach's sons. His father collected Bach manuscripts, and one could go on and on and on. So Mendelssohn was, as was his sister, these are musicians whose brains were sort of wired for counterpoint. And so they just love the complexities of this music. They love the chromaticism, the intricacies of writing fugues and canons, and also, of course, the chorales. Now, the use of the chorales partly has to do with Mendelssohn's identification after he's baptized with his new Lutheran faith. So he often inserts chorales into his music. One thinks of the Reformation Symphony, the last movement uses Ein Festeborg, A Mighty Fortress is Our God. Sometimes Mendelssohn will even make up his own chorales, what we call free chorales, which he does in the slow movement of the D major cello sonata, the last movement of the C minor piano trio. So from Bach, he acquired this intense study of counterpoint, the adoption of Lutheran hymns and chorales, and also an appreciation for the German historical tradition. One way to get at Mendelssohn's music is to hear it as music that is engaged with the whole tradition of German music, starting with Bach and continuing through Handel and Mozart and Haydn and Beethoven and Carl Maria von Weber and Louis Spohr up to Mendelssohn's present day. He's a composer like Brahms who was comfortable in connecting his music and relating it to what had come before. Now, that's not to take anything away from his innovations, considerable innovations in orchestration. And, you know, if one wants to find music that is utterly romantic and novel, one can do no better than the opening of the Hebrides or the Midsummer Night's Dream or the Erste Walpurgisnacht. You know, Mendelssohn was capable of writing novel effects, but he was also very much interested in situating himself and finding his identity in this progression of German music. And all roads, as far as he was concerned, led back to Bach.
During his lifetime, he was very celebrated, but there was a core of people, particularly towards his later years, that believed that there were two strikes against him. One, that he was somewhat traditional and revering Bach, and the other was the anti-Semitism that existed. And those two things kind of combined to put him into the shadows for a while.
Yes, that's exactly right. Now, we have to remember that he died in 1847, just before the 1848 revolution. So he's pre-revolution, and Wagner, in addition to, you know, writing an anti-Semitic diatribe against Mendelssohn and Meyerbeer, another Jewish musician, as far as Wagner was concerned, music before the 1848 revolution was old music. That was the old order. Wagner was interested in the new order, and for Wagner, that lay with the music drama and an opera. Mendelssohn was a composer who was still writing in the classical forms, rondo, theme and variation, sonata form. This is another attribute that he shares with Brahms. You know, Brahms would have a similar problem later in the 19th century. Brahms was perfectly content to continue to use rondo and sonata form, theme and variations, classical procedures, Baroque procedures, even though Brahms was, you know, he was a romantic composer writing in an unromantic age.
Now, he traveled a lot. He went to England. He was married and had five children. He had a relationship with Jenny Lind, allegedly.
Yes.
Did any of this inform his music?
Oh, sure. He went to England 10 times. He was anglicized, essentially. The English loved him the way they had loved Handel. And some of his music is in reaction to English taste. Elijah was composed for the Birmingham Musical Festival. It was performed in Birmingham at every festival until the demise of that, just before World War I. So Mendelssohn was a composer who could respond to different tastes. When he was in Italy, he was studying Renaissance music. When he was in France, he attended the opera. He had critical things to say about French music. He didn't much care for Berlioz, although he went out of his way to help him. He found Berlioz to be rather hyperbolic. But Mendelssohn was a keen observer of culture, history, and music. And if you read his letters, his letters are, you know, they're literary works. I mean, it's a fabulous prose style, very witty, humorous, and usually right on the mark.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.